With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Own Personal Beatles. I, as always, am Jack Pelling.
And I'm Robin Allender.
Today on the show, we're going to be talking to a fantastic comedian and musician, Johnny White, Really Really. And it's a bit of a different one from the last couple of episodes that we do go down a few sort of rabbit holes, and there's lots of great chat in there that's, you know, quite tangential.
Yeah.
And, of course, lots of Beatles stuff in there too.
Yeah, it's a good chat. I think tangential is becoming the buzzword for the podcast. I think, you know, it's fair to say that this could be our magical mystery tour moment. You know, fans have been following us and then they're like, what are they doing on Christmas Day?
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say if you followed us thus far, I think you're kind of getting what the purpose of this podcast is, and so hopefully this will be a good one for you. It was a really funny chat and fun chat because we talked about a lot of different things related to music, but we talked a lot about memory, and we talked a lot about, you know, the Beatles being these kind of very, very early forming memories of music. You know, lots of people have said their first memories of music were the Beatles, and I think Johnny articulates that very well. That's slightly strange, disorientating, confusing, scary experience of listening to the Beatles as a young child.
it's really made me kind of reassess my most formative Beatles memories, because it does lots of this conversation did reawaken the fact that I did actually react quite strongly and emotionally to some of the sort of darker stuff in there. So it's really interesting, and it's one that's been, we recorded it quite a while ago in lockdown. And it's really been sort of swimming around in my head ever since. And it's also, I think, the most that I've laughed doing one. There's really funny stuff in there as well.
Lots of chat about Steve Albini for some reason. I suppose because we were talking about the production side of things quite a bit. So, yeah, some Steve Albini chat.
There's some really good controversial Beatles opinions, some of my favourite ones so far. There's some great tangential quotes from sort of Cormac McCarthy books, and Frankenstein makes an appearance at the end.
Yeah, gets a mention, yeah.
I mean, there's not many roads we don't go down, so it's really enjoyable. Good. So, I mean, before we get stuck in, have you got anything on the agenda this week?
Well, the first thing I wanted to do, I'm getting the guitar out again, sorry.
Go get the guitar.
Get the guitar. Because the whole thing with me talking about Strawberry Fields last week was I forgot to say the main thing that was brilliant about Strawberry Fields, which is that when you listen to the demo, the really early demo.
On Anthology 2, I think.
Yeah, on Anthology 2. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. The bit where John Lennon hits that minor seven chord, you can hear him enjoying how much he loves that chord.
Yeah.
Strawberry Fields. You can feel the way that mood is changing from that major chord to that minor seven chord. And that's the amazing thing. You can hear him in that demo kind of filled with the joy of having written that change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so beautiful, like the way he kind of, you can hear the way it's like that slightly, it's very classically Lennon, isn't it? To start with a, let me take you down, like kind of positive upbeat melody to Strawberry Fields, you know, it's just.
It's such a brilliant sort of sigh into, I mean, and that's before it's even got that sort of descending glissando, which is the like most alarming thing about that one.
Definitely, it's only a small detail in the song. I mean, that chord progression, you know, the chords are very difficult and strange and unusual and go in all kinds of meandering directions. But just that simple change from the major to the minor seven, it just sums up that feeling of being slightly lost and confused in a dreamlike world, dreamlike melody. And, you know, and the demo is just brilliant because you can hear him relishing that change, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's so amazing about it.
There's quite a few of those where you can hear how pleased they are themselves. Sometimes with Paul, it's like a kind of a turn of phrase or an internal rhyme that you can tell
definitely.
That he's pretty chuffed with.
The amazing one I always think is 8 days a week. You can just tell how chuffed they are with that song. They're just so geared up on that song, aren't they? You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's probably a lot of the sort of joyous... I mean, some of those times that they, especially with George's kind of dominant semins that he got quite obsessed with and that are like the major hinge on of what loads of his work.
Yes.
But like they were discovering all of these kind of sort of more jazzy, more, you know, harmonically complex sort of ways of writing and stuff. And you can hear the sort of adventure in them.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
what makes them so listenable, I think.
Yeah. And I think definitely when by the time you get to All Things Must Pass, I think almost every almost every song on that has got it's a kind of beautiful major chord, then diverting into some weird diminished chord. You know, he's kind of he seems to really Harrison seems to relish those kind of changes.
Yeah, I mean, he loves kind of crazy key changes, a little bit like, you know, that the way that those Lennon melodies kind of meander off. I mean, even something that, like, you know, My Sweet Lord, which is ostensibly like a four-chord, kind of a gospel song, really, isn't it?
Well, it is literally.
But that does go off into sort of tangents, not unlike some of the chats in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing I wanted to say was I just saw my friend Daniel Greensmith posted this online, which I thought was really, really funny, which is about Hey Jude. Mm-hmm. And I asked him if I could read it out on the podcast, so here we go. He said, there are two types of people... who are so unspeakably awful that I'd happily call for them to be put in stocks in front of a massive crowd and pelted with cat shit. One, the people who sing the better, 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 better.
Yeah, right, okay, guilty.
Bit after just one verse of Hey Jude.
Oh, I see, right, okay. Yeah,
and the people who sing Hey Judy, 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 bit after just one na, 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 na at the end of Hey Jude. And in my experience, it's usually the same person. I just thought that really made me laugh.
It's brilliant.
It's like kind of slightly showing off that you know the bit that's coming kind of thing.
Yeah, and also just have a bit of patience. Like,
yeah,
you know it's
in
coming.
The end, singing along to the ad libs.
It really wouldn't work if it was on every single verse. Kiss up. I enjoyed that. It's a very, very good observation.
I was going to read a really nice review we got, which is cannot fault this podcast at all. It's perfect for any level Beatle fan, and the guests are superb. Really, really enjoying it. So thank you, Brain Penis, for that one on Apple Podcast.
What a great pseudonym.
Yeah, Brain Penis.
I mean, you'd have thought the other way around would probably be a more, conventional
penis brain.
Moniker.
Oh, God. Do you think it's a sarcastic review?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
So you never know, but, you know, as long as it's 5-star, it all counts towards the total score. So
very
pleased with that. And, thank you so much for the people who have left reviews and things. It's very kind of you, and it does help other people find the podcast. So if you do listen on Apple Podcasts or Acast or any other app on which you sort of, there's a kind of metric of quality, then do give us whatever the top denomination of the score is. It is really helpful, and I know it's horrible to harp on about it, but it does help us find new listeners, so it's all good.
Cool.
And you can keep in touch with us on social media and by getting in touch by email, like some of these lovely people coming up, but we're on social media at Personal Beatles on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all of that. And if you want to email the show, you can go to personalbeatles.com/contact, or you can email me at jack@homespunsounds.com. And I got a couple of ones that particularly that I thought was interesting that arrived in the mailbox from last night, from all the way from Australia.
Whoa.
So there you go. It's from Gareth Libbert. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And he has contacted us about sort of food-related Beatles email and says, I have a suggestion for a topic you two could delve into on your show, the Beatles' diets. It may give us some insight into why their hair grew so fast. So good callback to episode one there.
Yeah. My friend Holly also mentioned this as well, that the kind of hair growth might have been... Yeah, the diet might have been a factor in the rapid hair growth of 68.
Yeah, I mean, it is still a kind of unsolved phenomena.
Yeah.
And he says, I know George loved his chocolate digestives in the studio and Yoko once stole some when he left. And John loved his chocolate Olivers, but I would love to know what they preferred to eat for breakfast, lunch and dinner and all the snacks in between. I don't know if that's like asking for our expertise there or if it's just a sort of hypothetical.
Well, Ringo famously, I mean, Ringo brought a suitcase of Heinz beans to Rishikesh, didn't he?
I think so, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, and his hair didn't grow as much.
Anyway, and then he lists, you know, a very generous amount of Beatles songs as kind of food puns.
Oh, food puns, okay.
So we've just read out some of them. Happiness is a warm bun, Norwegian wood-fired pizza, let it bean, please feed me, I want to hold your ham. And then there's probably about 20 or 30 more.
Lovely.
Which I won't read out all of them, but if you've got if you know any sort of Beatles eating habit, factoids. I mean,
I'm just trying to think of more now, you know.
I mean, in the day in the life, does he have anything for breakfast? I think he just has a coffee and
a cigarette on the bus,
doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe he didn't eat breakfast at all, which is not recommended. Yeah. It is the most important meal of the day.
Yeah. What else is there in food? I mean, you got Savoy truffle, of course.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some semolina pilchards. I don't know. They don't sound very nice.
No.
A lot of the, especially dripping from a dead dog's eye.
Yeah.
Not recommended.
Christ. I was thinking that's a Shakespeare allusion, isn't it? Hamlet. Isn't there something about dripping from a dead dog's eye in Hamlet?
There might well be. I mean, King Lear is the reference from Iron the Walrus that I know.
Untimely death.
Yeah.
So Hamlet. Oh yeah, it's in Hamlet where Hamlet's kind of pretending to be mad or is actually mad. For if the sun breed maggots in a dead dog, being a good kissing carrion. Have you a daughter? Yeah. So I always thought. I mean, who knows? Did John Lennon read Hamlet? Maybe. Probably.
Anyway, we'll crack on with the show. And if you don't know Johnny White really, really his work, how would you sort of best describe him to the layman?
So Johnny White is a musician and a stand-up comedian from Sheffield. He's released music under the name of The Roller Coaster Project, Farewell, Prison and Christmas. And as a comedian, Johnny has performed two brilliant and unique shows at the Edinburgh Fringe, Pigeons and Unending Torment, both of which are available on his Bandcamp page. So I describe Johnny's style as a kind of ambient comedy, meandering stories, floating punchlines. I once saw him read the entirety of Philip Larkin's poem O Bard on stage, only to shatter the mood by triggering a sample of Smoke Weed Every Day from the Dr. Dre song. I think Johnny's just very interesting to talk to. He's very interested in music production. He's produced for Girlfriend of the Year, which is a really good album. And yeah, so this is why I thought it'd be good to talk to, because he's obviously interested in comedy and music, and I think the Beatles are very much in that Venn diagram.
yeah, definitely. No, it's really interesting, and he's got a very good way of sort of explaining kind of sonic ideas on a quite sort of visceral and emotional level.
Yeah, so very personal, sort of subjective really way. I love the way he says the trumpet solo in Penny Lane felt like it was making fun of him.
Yeah,
really good.
That's really good. At the end, he does reveal that he is a bit worried about not being expert enough to be on a Beatles podcast, but. And we must reiterate that, you know, this podcast, what we said before, is very much about our sort of emotional journey with the Beatles. And that's the kind of starting point. And no one is pretending to be a Beatles expert, because there are hundreds of fantastic podcasts that do that sort of thing. And we're more sort of interested in people hearing people's personal stories. And I think this episode does that really well.
You can't get your own memories wrong, although you can.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's no one fact-checking them, so...
Yeah. So please sit back and enjoy Johnny White Really, Really.
So Steve Albini, don't get me wrong.
No.
Are you going to get me wrong?
Yeah, I'm going to try and get you wrong. Steve Albini's written the objective way that you should use a gate.
I trapped a bit of a A4 paper using under my... it's hard to explain. Steve, you know, for example, all apologies.
Yeah.
You know when he sings, oh, when he goes up for the high, high notes.
Yeah.
Steve Ibe is a good thing. I think that he's annoying and the way he records is annoying. But and I don't like his stupid blog about food. It's awful.
I've got a lot of problems with Steve Albini. Well, no, he's great. He's a very talented man.
But he does the thing where it's like a gate activated reverb. So if you sit there where Kurt Cobain sings over a certain, I mean, you can do it with anyone. It doesn't just work with Kurt Cobain.
David Bowie did this with Low, where he had a series of microphones.
So if you sing loud, it activates the that sort of spring reverb. So that's why all apologies has that sort of.
It sounds great.
But also, we've said this before. Me and you, Robin, have had this conversation. Well, I've definitely said this. Well, I've said this to everyone.
Yeah.
But what annoys me is, I was reading a Steve Albini thing where he's saying the way he records the drums is the way that a drummer would hear them. But why has that ever been the rule? Like, imagine if Phil Spector had done that.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
The kind of Phil Spector Christmas album. It'd be awful.
I mean, Steve Albini's whole thing is about capturing a band in a room, but sometimes... can sound better than a band in a room, right?
I don't want to capture a band. I've had enough of bands in rooms.
Yeah.
That's my whole life has been bands.
There's a great interview I heard with Steve Albini where he... Because basically, you know who we're talking about, obviously, Jack with Steve.
Yeah.
His whole thing is about capturing this objective reality, I'd say, in recording. I mean, he is a brilliant engineer.
Yeah.
But this whole thing is... He obviously hates artifice.
Ugh.
You know, and I once heard this interview with him where someone asked him if he liked Breaking Bad, and he said no because he didn't like actors. Because pretending to be people.
What
they're
it
not.
Is, I think, it's like a sort of, it's the American indie / alternative, anything that sprung out of hardcore, which is sort of like the incel boys with incel boy weird morality rules about stuff, which they leaked into. Technology, so this idea of reverb being immoral.
Yeah, that's there are almost ethical judgments around
which
it, aren't there?
Absolutely bizarre. And like the thing where he's like, that people always share that letter he wrote to Nirvana where he said he couldn't sleep at night if he took like percentage points on the album. It's like, well, that's just your
that's you
fine,
being mad.
But like you also don't worry if you do that. Like,
but that's
like judging people on a moral standard that you have just created arbitrarily.
That thing about I really like with Heart-Shaped Box, where I think was Heart-Shaped Box the one where they had to remix it to make it slightly more radio friendly.
Yeah.
Had the vocals a bit higher in the mix, and Steve Albini said, I don't understand it. I did everything I could to make it sound as good as possible. And just forgetting that good as possible is an entirely subjective thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he isn't God. He hasn't decided that this is objectively good, as good as it can get.
Yeah, and that guy Scott Little, whatever he's called. Anyway, so this is this about Steve Albini, this podcast? Yeah.
it's quite a nice... Let's try and introduce you a bit.
Okay.
I think we could include some of the Albini chat.
Yeah, welcome to your own personal Albini. Jack Belling and Robin Ander.
Well, so welcome, Johnny White.
Hi, Johnny White. Really, really, really.
Yeah, burst forth. What do the Beatles mean to you? And what's your first memory?
When I was five, I got a guitar, and the first thing I played was Wild Thing on one string on it,
nice.
Which is just it's 1, 4, and 5 of the chords. If you play it in any key, and I got a records, which was this unofficial Beatles, it was like Beatles Rock and Roll.
This has come up a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah,
really NAF cover.
Yeah,
1977 compilation.
My Nana had that on tape. Yeah.
And I remember my mum saying, I remember my mum saying that the cover was a touched up photograph and not, and finding just that phrase really weird in my head for years.
But it's not. It's a cartoon, isn't it?
It's like a painted... It's a painting. Right. Well, the one I have was that. I'll see if I could...
I've got it here, I think.
Let's see if it's the one, because if it's the one, I'm going to
I remember it kind of had a yellow frame around it.
You'll have a yellow frame if you're not careful.
Oh, right. Oh, no, that's not the one I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Mine was called Beatles Golden Oldies, actually.
Twist and Shout, Still Her Standing There.
Yeah,
Can't Do That, Wanna Be Your Man. Call Your Name, Boys, Long Tall Sally.
I tell you what I had, because I'm looking at it right now on... Yes, oh my... Okay, this is the one. So, what do I do to show you? How do I make you...
Hang on a second. Golden Oldies was released in 1966. That doesn't make sense.
That's not very golden.
They weren't that old. They were only 3 years old then. Not the Beatles. That's insane. It was released as a stopgap between sort of Revolver and Sgt. Pepper. Sorry, carry
on, Johnny. I want you to click on that link.
Oh, wow.
Right, okay.
That looks the kind of like... So this, we're looking at the Beatles Rock and Roll Music Volume 1.
That is the one I had.
And it looks like almost a sort of Soviet-era East German kind of artist's impression of the Beatles there, I think.
But that's what my mum was like. You can see more, as my mum would say, is a touched-up photo.
So Lennon's wearing his kind of Dylan-esque hat. This is about 65-ish, I'd say, we're looking at. I sound like I'm on the Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you look at that Beatles Oldies record I sent through? Because so it's very Sgt. Pepper-y artwork. Beatles and this is the oldies. One I remember my nana having.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So what songs are on that? So it had She Loves You, From Me to You, We Can Work It Out, all the way up to Yellow Submarine, Eleanor Rigby, Paperback Writer. So mental that they called it the Oldies.
Well, they were early examples of what that, whatever his name is, versus Retromania. What's that called?
Oh, Simon Reynolds is Retromania. Yeah, instant obsession with the past.
Yeah, there you go. So I had that. And also, even though I'm not from this far in the past, but I listened to my mum had Reel to Reel player.
Wow.
And I used to listen to Please Please Me on Reel to Reel.
Amazing.
This is when I was sort of like 5, 6, and kind of coincided with the first time I saw Hard Day's Night.
Wow. So it's very formative stuff, isn't it?
It was the thing that I wanted to do the most when I was very little was be in the Beatles. And I also didn't, obviously because as a kid I didn't understand that these songs, I didn't understand what recording was in terms of multi-tracking, as my like 6 years.
Well, as a 6-year-old, you didn't understand multi-tracking.
But so I thought they were recorded live. Right. So when I was listening to them when I was a kid, I imagine that I could hear stuff going on in the crowd.
Right.
Like I have some almost like auditory hallucinations about what like scuffles and weird events that were going on at the gigs at these.
Because did you think it was actually happening as you were listening to it?
Yeah, I thought it was a recording of a live concert. And then I got given the tapes, the blue and the red tapes.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a sort of because I was listening to those every night as I was going to sleep. And would always get this incredibly sad image of. Have you ever been to Mill Hill?
I think so.
Like a big Sunday-ish suburb of quite similar looking streets. The end of one of the sides, I think it could have been the end of the last side, the blue side, or near the end was the long and winding road. And I used to get this image of Paul McCartney, but in my head he was sort of like a bit like my teacher, Mr. Hitchman, walking around suburban roads in the sunshine, but with a sad aspect, you know, like on how everything's sad on a Sunday. And it used to make me feel so sad that I wouldn't be able to fall asleep, and I'd have to turn the tape back on to the other side.
Yeah, did you ever listen to tapes falling asleep, Jack? Did you ever?
I did, yeah, a lot of audiobooks. And a lot of Beatles as well.
Oh, really?
And I still kind of do, actually. If I'm a bit of an insomniac, so I try and do it. But it's that or absolute silence. And if there's anything between, it has to be a bit of music.
I listen to Tubular Bells 2, Falling Asleep, and the Red Dwarf audiobook. And
I thought you could say the Red Dwarf theme.
Really loud. And Victoria Wood, as seen on TV. We used to listen to that every night falling asleep.
Well, I've always listened to story tapes. There was a turning point with... So there was a point where I was listening to... I used to read the Faraway Tree books and listen to the Beatles until I fell asleep. And then it became a turning point and it was on Christmas Eve... when I realised I didn't want to listen to the Beatles anymore because I had to listen to Just Speech because there was too... This is a strange admission. but there was too much scope with music to drift into my own thoughts, and I didn't. I needed to be distracted from my thoughts in order to feel comfortable enough to sleep. Yeah. So I remember there being a point where I was like, and that must have been when I was sort of eight, and ever since then I've never gone to sleep to music because
my mind
wanders too much, and then so I need it to be something that will actually distract me. So someone's speaking.
Yeah, I find.
So then it was story tapes, and then there was the Storyteller series, which were these ones you got. I think they gave them away with the front of some magazine, but I had the collection of them. It's like Richard Brier's doing a small section of Heidi. That's not all it is. And then in 2011, I bought all of them on a DVD, weirdly, on eBay. So to see what would happen if I listened to the same stories tape that I did when I was a little kid as an adult. Yeah. And the results have been very successful.
Well, the phrases of those kind of stuff you listen to at that age really sink in. Like, I remember there's a line in the Red Dwarf audiobook where they talk about a planet instigating an eight-day calendar. And that I just find myself... That phrase would run through my head in the waking day. It's an 8-day calendar, and I wouldn't know
which
why.
One was it better than life?
It was both of them, so it was the Red Dwarf. It was the Omnibus, read by Chris Barrett. When you started growing up and getting into more music, how did you kind of... Were the Beatles still a part of your listening habits and things like that?
The Beatles remained a part of my listening habits. I pretended to be ill... on the day of my 11th birthday, and I was actually a bit ill, but I milked it, and it was my birthday, so... and I got the White Album on CD.
Wow, expensive at the time.
Yeah,
so I was into that, but then simultaneously, it could have been my... it wasn't my 12th, it was my 11th birthday, but by then I was already... because I had older friends... and was already getting into sort of quite dogmatic punk through being into metal, it all became hardcore. So then I had to sort of pretend to not like the Beatles. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I had this when I was a kid, definitely, where I was so into Nirvana that basically I became, like you say, and we're talking about that Albini approach of being quite kind of very puritanical almost about tastes. Where I would get so into something that it wouldn't allow me to be into something else. So the fact that I liked playing football wouldn't equate with me being into Nirvana, so I just stopped playing football.
Yeah, same here. I didn't understand how people could...
Do both
of them.
Yeah, I was really like that.
It just seemed like...
Yeah,
it's bizarre. It's like I had a thing where I couldn't understand how people liked Pearl Jam and Nirvana at the same time.
Yeah, and this carried on until I was at university.
So I mean, I still think like that a bit.
Really? Yeah, true. Me too.
Well, I didn't really get into... Well, I had a little dalliance with sort of hardcore music, but I was more into hip-hop in my teens. And I had moved away in a similar fashion, and then until I got Paul's Boutique.
Right.
Which is just rammed full of illegally done Beatles samples.
Yeah, we were listening to Paul's Boutique.
And then I was like, oh, okay, well, if it's fine for the Beastie Boys to sample the Beatles, then the Beatles must be cool in the hip-hop world.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Went back to it.
Well, I remember seeing a kid at school who was like a kind of a hippie, but wearing a Beatles T-shirt and feeling a sense of envy that he felt he was... I was like, oh, God, I could just still like it.
Yeah, it's like you could have... I could have just carried on playing football.
I was listening. Kind of, by that point, I was like... It didn't make it... I was like, my listening habits... it disturbed me because I was like, well, it shouldn't be possible to be into this disparate... Do you know, if you see what... I was listening to the Beatles, so I'd be listening to the Beatles almost in secret to myself.
Yeah.
But then I was feeling ashamed
slightly as well.
I was listening to a band. There was a band from Bradford called Unborn, who were like sort of a vegan metal band. But I sent off for this. It's called Ancestral Pagan Roots. Good 7-inch. Sounds a bit like really quite poorly performed. It's not poorly performed. It's like it sounds a bit like Slayer, but they're screaming. But it's like from the perspective of a witch being burnt at the stake. I actually copied out the lyrics and presented it as an original piece of poetry, which I'd done the year before with the Beatles. Done it with Till There Was You, which I'd put Till There Was Spring and sent it and handed it in as a poem about the spring.
From one year. Is that quite a romantic song, though?
Yeah, but
so you're sort of in love with the spring.
Yeah. So I sort of, and there was also this like, so like, and this is also like a sort of weird, like it's that. So that transition also, it was another transition of I had an army jacket, and in the last year of primary school, like a German army jacket, I painted a flower on it.
Right.
And then by the time I got to secondary school, I like crossed it all out and wrote destroy on it.
But was the flower still visible?
Yeah, that was like all just sort of like lots of golden spray paint all over it to try and sort of like get rid of any. But then I still really did like it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I remember when I went to university and sort of had to put all my CDs out on display, I had the Blue album by Weezer. And I was sort of ashamed of it, so I hid it behind the CD shelves. And like, even though I really liked it, I suppose you're worried that people might think come round and think it wasn't cool.
It's like when I've got my potted history of my own tastes with music.
Yeah,
it's like a sort of it's like Napoleon writing his own, you know, biography. It's all like I've made it like a smooth transition, which I consider
to
be.
Was, well, you mean you've edited your past?
Yeah. Well, I've edited it to make so because it was all I was sort of doing all of it all the time and pretending to myself and to everyone else in different groups.
But this was the thing that happened. I remember this as a teenager, and you would never admit to it, but you were absolutely one was absolutely obsessed with being cool, really, or how cool you might appear. So these things all seem to matter like very deeply, and I think getting into Nirvana or music that felt politically charged, I suppose, not that Nirvana particularly is, but you definitely felt yourself identifying with that kind of group and what they represented, I suppose, and it made it like it really affected the way you thought about the world, I think.
Yeah.
So in interviews with Kurt Cobain, where he said he hated jocks at school or whatever. I was I can't to be play like, football now.
But then, because also then with punk, because by the time I got into hardcore, we decided that the Sex Pistols weren't punk because they were on a major label.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So, and I remember, and also I remember a big discussion, but having enough money to be able to get a Gang of Four album, being with my friend in Virgin Megastore and discussing whether we could buy it because it was on EMI and we didn't realise.
Right.
We're like, it's on a major label, but if we buy it together, we'll tape it. Like, so there's so much dogma.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, and then in amongst all of that, and all of that, like, kind of the sort of loathing that the different groups had for each other's taste. And I sort of liked all of it, apart from sport. I mean, I didn't like sport, but, like, all music and all culture, I was sort of into all of it secretly and in secret from all different groups. To then, the idea in those days of then being at a party and suddenly putting on the Beatles would have been completely unthinkable. So so from this thing that had been the sort of beginning of me ever wanting to do music or be in a band or like weirdly it's from the Hard Day's Night film, just like the first song that they were called for when they're rehearsing for the TV.
I Should Have Known Better, is it?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Great song.
I was like, from that to then being sort of a teenager and it being essentially like a sort of a secret that I kept for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so depressing to have done that.
Obsessed with class at that age, where I was like, because I'd read, you know, NME or biographies of musicians and things, and I just knew that it was incredibly uncool to be middle class. So I was so like filled with a kind of weird self-hatred that nothing I could do could ever be of value because like I didn't grow up in rural Seattle or something.
But my mum told me that hippies were posh. I remember being really shocked and appalled. I could never have grown up in rural Seattle.
Yeah, I remember the, reading about a thing where Green Day... Where were Green Day from? Were they Californian?
California.
Yeah, where they grew up in the punk club. The club where they used to play put up a sign saying Green Day would never be allowed to play here again after they signed to a major label. Yeah. It's
like, oh God, there was worse yet to come for those disappointed Green Day set up.
But imagine just like... I mean, who cares, really?
Like... The other days, I remembered years ago going to a gig in Leeds and the Kooks, remember the Kooks?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just when they got big were theirs, and someone that they used to know from Shropshire came up to them and said that they'd gone corporate, and one of them started crying in the back room. Because they're like old friends, and we're going in there, and one of the Kooks was kind of like...
Kook crying.
Yeah, because you've been told that the Kooks were corporate.
But it's so. I remember as well having a band practice with the first time we got together, and it was with a couple of friends, just like two guitars and a bass or something. And in the first practice, we talked about whether we should sign to a major league. first practice. I don't think we should. You know, I just it's been amazing.
I used to really hate the trumpet solo on Penny Lane.
Really?
I thought silly. I thought it was
a bit twee.
I felt like it was making fun of me for being into like I was really moved by it, and it's like there's this like someone from the army's come to make fun of me. Right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you know, like...
I mean, it's so Paul McCartney. Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing that... I think we were talking about this on another episode. It's the kind of thing that one's dad would listen to and really admire because it's more kind of a classical kind of influence.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was... And because of his childhood... I mean, his dad was a musician and he was a child trumpet player, I think, which is why he wanted that particular sound. Yeah. But yeah, it does sound... And, you know, it's just... Those two records of Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane are just, they couldn't be more quintessentially Lennon and McCartney respectively.
Strawberry Fields got great drums on it. I mean, I'm not the first person to have, unless no one's ever noticed that.
Amazing
before.
Drums. Although when I was listening to the new Sgt. Pepper, when they have the remixed versions and they have the two different takes that they stitch together, the drumming sounds a little bit less impressive without like being cranked up with varied speed to like the
Well, degree. The reason it kind of fades out and fades in again, isn't it? Because the drums went out of sync with the other part of the song, didn't they?
Okay.
So yeah. Talking about the sort of production style, you know, you mentioned that you thought that the Beatles were actually playing live out of your stereo when you were younger.
Well, I thought I could hear at the end of Hey Jude a bouncer throwing someone off the stage. I used to imagine these huge things that were always quite scary. Like, right. I used to imagine there being a lot of like violence that I could sort of overhear. Very weird. When did I first
understand the idea of it being produced by lots of men in white coats in Abbey Road?
Because my uncle, who's also called Johnny, just as I am. in very much the same manner as I am. When I was in primary school, he had a sort of home studio set up, and he got me a 4-track cassette recorder, which I still have.
Nice.
And so from about sort of year six of primary school, I had in my room a 4-track cassette recorder, a keyboard, and they used to plug the keyboard just straight into the tape. I lacked the offboard effects to mimic any of the Beatles technique. I didn't accidentally
have a big Leslie speaker.
No. But that was those things that I always wanted to do, like try and get vocal, because I didn't know what the ADT stuff is, you know, the way the vocals sound
artificial double tracking.
Yeah.
Oh, it's where they're slightly out of phase and you get
I think on Across the Universe.
Yeah.
I would want to try and get the microphone sound
the
like
the
that.
Stuff but you've done with your own stuff, and also you've produced Girlfriend of the Year material. And that is, which is the production of that, is really, really interesting. And the vocals are very heavily artificial, you know.
Yeah.
Steve Albini would hate it. But that is definitely a Lennon thing, wasn't it? He wanted his voice to sound like it did in, like, Aunt Mimi's Conservatory, was it?
Oh, right. Is that... Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he wanted the kind of echoey sound of where he used to sing. And there's a lovely bit in Retromania, actually. We're just talking about Simon Reynolds, where, you know, after Lennon left the Beatles and he wanted to go back to the kind of rock and roll sound and create very raw, simple recordings. And he saw the idea that, well, Lennon didn't realise that those early Elvis records or Little Richard were still produced. He thought of that as the kind of objective reality, but they were still produced, but just in a different way, you know.
And
the vocals on that rock and roll record are quite hard to listen to.
Yeah, I like
so
it.
Much of that slapback delay.
The little very
that double tracked is just
Another thing that used to I was also very early. Because they've been out for years, but amongst people, I had a Walkman from year five. Is it annoying to bring in school years?
No, it's fine.
Contextualize
it.
From the second to last year five, aka the penultimate year of primary school.
Right. Yeah.
AKA 1993 or four, I think, for me, depending on how old I am. I had a Walkman, and you weren't supposed to bring it into. I used to sneak it into school and listen, and lunchtime, I'd sneak back into the classroom and hide underneath a big pile of coats and listen to a Walkman.
I used to hide under the pile of coats.
I still love hiding under that pile. I wish I could live under that pile.
Me and my friends used to hide under the pile of coats, and one time the headmistress came in to the changing room. And we started embezzling
funds. You could,
but we were stock still under the coats, thinking we were about to be discovered, and we almost kind of stood up and confessed we're under the coats. But she just walked away. It was an incredible moment. It was an incredible moment.
So I saw a Walkman, and I remember an early thing that disturbed me about the Beatles from listening to it off. Because I had a clock radio that had a cassette, which is just one speaker, so not much scope to analyze the stereo listening to it on my headphones, that mad thing of panning the drums all the way.
Oh, yeah, the hard panning,
I mean, which is, I still think is, like, I think it's a sickening thing to do.
It's not actually something the Beatles would have signed off, is it? They signed off the mono mixes.
They should have sacked Abbey Road.
Yeah.
song was that on?
It's on loads. It's on Penny Lane. It's on loads of that era, where the drums are all on what if you listen to on headphone.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. The drums doesn't pan from one ear round.
Voices and basses. So often I'd be listening to one because I'd be sneaking around with my headphones with wire at my sleeve. I'd often be like doing that one ear thing, get like a bit of harmony and bass. And I think I can feel myself being still angry about that.
Well, lots of Beatles fans say that, you know, the mono mixes are the...
Well, I just want to see stereo mixes, but with the drums in the middle.
You should listen to the remasters. The remasters are superb for that.
Did they do that?
Yeah.
Okay, well then they took my advice, but several years late.
Yeah.
I wish they'd... seen sense, but I suppose they weren't really thinking. People didn't really listen to music on headphones, did they?
Well, stereo was such a new thing that it was the whole idea of it was that it would be impressive to have the drums on one speaker and the voice on the other because it would be the first time people would have a set of. I don't really know.
I don't even have monitors. I don't have studio monitors for music. I do all
you mix them on headphones. Yeah, I do quite a lot of mixing.
I've got tinnitus as a result.
But, oh, really? Well, Steve Albini would probably despise you for mixing headphones.
He would despise me, and rightly so.
Yeah.
So
I think the only time that they ever recorded specifically, like the drums were properly mic'd up for stereo, was in the end.
Is it really?
So it was a bit like, come on, you might as well have just not either done it earlier or not bothered.
But that is interesting, isn't it? Because what makes Pet Sounds such an amazing record sonically is the mix, isn't it? Which is a mono mix. And it's just beautifully layered. You know, you've just got this one channel. And it's just, if you need to hear something, it needs to be on top of something else. So there's this just lovely
Have you seen that clip in the George Martin documentary where he goes over to see Brian Wilson and he's like, so I thought we'd go and have a look at the old original four-track. And he's sort of playing around with the faders, sort of describing all of the individual parts or whatever. And then he just sort of, out of force of habit, makes his own kind of mix out of it. And you just see Brian Wilson's face drop.
Really?
What's wrong? And he's basically like... You've just done a better mix. You've just made a better mix of God only knows. I'm really annoyed.
Brian Wilson was so self-deprecating, wasn't he? He was just completely crippled by self-doubt, wasn't he?
I can't remember what it was. It was like a coterie of videos that I would watch that were pop. It's like half an episode of If I Got News For You and a bit of Top of the Pops. Like, you know, there's stuff, and there's one that was like a bit of a documentary about the Beatles. And even I remember even... at the time, realizing that, you know, there's a bit about Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds where George Martin's like recounting that people had told him that it was about drugs. And he was like, utter rubbish. Even then, I knew the boys smoked pot, and they equally knew I disapproved. He does seem like a nice man. Do you think did know? And he was just saying that as a sort of. Just a sort of the kind of. Do you know what I mean? Do you think.
Well, the whole thing was so new, wasn't it? Like, I guess he wouldn't.
But do you think do you think by then he knew, but he was still. He just didn't want to rat him out still?
Maintained that song had nothing. It was obviously influenced by the effects of it. It was one of Julian's pictures or whatever.
But that seems ridiculous that it would be.
I mean, it's a big coincidence. Even if he was taking LSD every day,
like at the time, and the song is just so almost like a cliche of an acid kind of vision.
And it's just something where even if he had done the picture. And it was called Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It seems the idea that he wouldn't have noticed that it's about LSD, and that wouldn't have been it doesn't really cover your back. Like, as in, even if that's true that picture exists, it was still because it was spelt LSD that was used as the title, obviously, right?
It must have been.
He was just like a sort of posh old dad that was very naive, so maybe he just, or maybe he just completely separated the two.
Yeah.
one thing I really dislike about Sergeant Pepper is the way it feels like they were, you know, the real swats in school at that stage, and that it feels like a school project done by. Do you ever get that feeling? Like Benefit of Mr. Kite just feels like.
Oh God! Yeah.
It's crap. That
is lame.
What? No, it's not.
It's not.
But do you know what I mean? It feels like they're the head boys, like in a school, kind of that they've kind of. It's just a bit too. Well, there's something almost academic.
I mean,
about
they tried too hard.
Yeah, they tried to. They should have tried less hard.
Well, that's why you like the White Album, because the White Album is just a mess of people on drugs that hate each other.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I love Sergeant Pepper, but things I don't like about it, where it almost seems like it's a kind of academic exercise. So Lucy in the Sky is an example where it's like, it's so like a kind of, it's too pitch perfect of an acid trip kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I also don't like it when they say, and tonight Mr. Kite is topping the bill. It's like, great. Why are you landing on that? I don't care what he does.
I like the way he says I don't know if it's deliberate, but he says Somerset instead of Somersault, doesn't he?
Yeah. Nice. Of course, Henry the Waltz, Horse Dances the Waltz is one of the great internal rhymes of.
Henry the Horse. Yeah. That is good.
Do you want to guess what is this my favourite song of Sergeant Pepper's? Is that a fun game?
Is it Fixing a Hole?
No.
Is it She's Leaving Home?
It is.
An amazing song.
Yeah. Oh, damn. I was hoping that would be.
I can't remember who it was who said it, but it might have been like. Margaret
was it me?
But
it was my favourite song.
Just then. I think it's might have been Margaret Drabble said how amazing it was to hear a song with the word clutching in it. Clutching the handkerchief, you know. So
that used to give me a very powerful. I think probably around that time, it mixed up in my mental image of Adrian Mole, where Adrian Mole lived.
Mm.
So I had an image of his house. Which it doesn't mean anything because that's also just my image in my head.
Yeah.
But I could really picture the seat that, and I listened to that. She's Leaving Home. I listened to.
It's very evocative, isn't it? I definitely had an image in my head of the house and the mother and the father. You know.
Yeah. I think it's great, and the bye-bye.
That's I guessed it as because you obviously had a very kind of cerebral reaction to those soundscapes and stuff in the same way that I did. And that is the one. That's the one that I remember first, and also it is my favorite track of that record.
Oh, nice!
I think if you grew up as a kid, it was like, you know, this is a new type of thing.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, storytelling, and I remember listening to it really loud in my parents' little record player that used to have down, and my dad. I played it about four times in a row, and then I wanted to record it on my tape. Thing. I had a little recorder thing with a little microphone and I was going to take it back to school with me because I obviously couldn't carry the music around. And then it's just got at the end my dad going, "Will you shut those fucking scousers up?"
That's great.
So that probably still on that tape somewhere.
That's amazing.
So one of the questions that we ask everyone on the podcast, Johnny, is do you have a controversial Beatles opinion?
I mean, also, this isn't even controversial at all. I hate it when people who don't know what they're talking about say that Ringo Starr's not good at playing the drums.
I mean, that's kind of like...
That hasn't come up yet. I would have thought that would be a
common
one.
There's so much kind of... It's one of those things where there's so many...
It's so boring and lazy.
Yeah. People who say that should have their human rights taken away from them. I don't put that in a movie. No, I don't really think that, but I think they should at least be given a fine, a £2,000 fine.
It's an interesting thing because you're basically saying either I'm very stupid or I don't know what good drumming sounds like. So you've either heard it and you've decided it's not good drumming, in which case you're objectively wrong, or you're just saying someone else's opinion because you've heard it somewhere.
Well, for me, it makes
recycling
comes from
that misquote of the John Lennon Ringo not being the fourth best drummer in the band, which he never actually said.
And also, it's like
Paul McCartney is a better drummer than Ringo, though.
I don't know, man, because I don't really like he plays drums on While My Guitar Gently Weeps, doesn't he?
Dear Paul McCartney doesn't.
And I think they say I don't think that sounds good. Anyway,
well.
But the, do you know in Blood Meridian,
Cormac McCarthy. Yeah.
There's a line where there's a bit where the kid near the beginning meets some old prospector. I can't really remember the ins and outs of it. He stays in a tent with them overnight, and in the night he wakes up and the guy's like laying over him. Anyway, that doesn't come up in it. But he says to the something like, "What kind of a world is this?" to the prospector about the state of reality, and the prospector said, "What world does a man know which suits him better?" And that when people say about Ringo Starr, it's like, what, you think there's a better version of the Beatles?
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know that could have happened? Like, there would have been... No, if only he'd been better at... It would have been... It's like, would have been different then? So what are you talking about? Like,
yeah. I think like, the thing, it just stems from, doesn't it, like, in the... When they were around and Ringo was just the you know, played the fool, didn't he? And he was the kind of, you know, the clown of the band. So I think the reputation that he was a bad drummer stemmed from the fact that he was just the kind of clown of the group for whatever reason. And, you know, but yeah, it's kind of a daft thing to say.
But you only need to listen to, like, those first records that they ever played with him compared to the Pete Best ones, who was a sort of serviceable but unremarkable drummer. Yeah. There is something in the way that he pushed them along, and his, like, it's just such idiosyncratic drumming.
Definitely.
And he's so rhythmically, like, free. That it allowed the band to work, and at the end of the why, if anyone, it's impossible to answer the question why are the Beatles so good. If there is an answer, it's because they're an amazing band that played together, unlike anyone ever.
Yeah,
and he was at least 25% of that. So
yeah,
you can't really remove him from the equation.
No. I don't like Paul McCartney's violin bass.
I always said that.
I think it looks stupid. I think that Wilfred Bramble's really good in Hard Day's Night.
He's he is. He's brilliant.
I'd rather kill myself than make a point about anything. But like, think about the way they are. You know the guy in the train carriage at the beginning.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I fought the war for your sort." And Ringo's like, "I bet you, sorry, you won." Imagine someone being about the Second World War about now.
That's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. But like, it's the now. It's like, you know. All this world of poppies or whatever. I know that was does that make any sense?
It's definitely more precious to a generation that never fought in it to the people that actually did.
Yeah,
it would have been that would have been quite an extremely cheeky, inappropriate remark at the time.
Yeah.
But now it would be strictly
so cheeky. He could that's his thing.
Now it'd be strictly verboten, I think. Yeah.
Have you seen the video for the Paul McCartney solo song Queenie Eye from about 4 years ago?
Yeah, Johnny Depp in it.
Ooh,
it's terrible, isn't it?
Wow, that's great, man. Yeah, give that. If it's been a while, shove that on.
I don't mind the song though, to be honest.
Yeah, it sounds okay, but I mean, is it Johnny Depp singing by the piano? I think.
And it sort of slowly fills up with horrible ghouls. And at the end, like, James Corden does, like, the drums.
Drums. God.
Oh, God.
It would be Corden.
Corden blur.
Deary me.
Corden.
Yeah,
Corden
I think that carpool karaoke is one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen.
It's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. I hate the worst thing about it is when he locks eyes with his guest when they sing a harmony.
Say when he locks the car door.
Yeah, that's what they get in and he locks the car. You're not going anywhere. It's so horrible. Oh, but you know what I mean? When he sings the harmony and he locks eyes with the person.
Yeah. And you can tell in his head he's thinking, maybe I am the new John Lennon.
Yeah.
But can I make what I say now a matter of public record?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I was listening to this and I was a Beatles fan and I listened to him, I think that person you just had on didn't know anything. Why do you have him?
It's not about. I know, it's not a history podcast. We're not interrogating.
I don't want. Do you think people are going to think that I'm so stupid that I'm evil?
Well, they'll know that at the quiz at the end.
Good. Okay.
Is there isn't really a quiz.
Can I just repeat that? He said, "Well, people think you're so stupid that you're evil."
I just don't want them
to. So
if you're listening to that and that's what you think, I already think it. So, so don't think that you're not surprising me.
There's a brilliant bit in Frankenstein at the end. I've been reading Frankenstein this week because I was teaching it, Can I just read you the bit at the end about Frankenstein apologizing? And it's so funny because it sounds exactly like, it's such a shit apology. Bearing in mind the monster, not Frankenstein himself.
Oh, right, okay.
So the monster has killed a few people by now, and this is the end. And this reminds me of you, Johnny.
Which one am I? I'm Frankenstein.
Yeah,
that's
no,
not
the
monster. I'm the monster. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's true that I'm a wretch. I have murdered the lovely and the helpless. So this is about you, Johnny. I have strangled the innocent as they slept and grasped to death his throat who never injured me or any other living thing.
Very safe.
That's you. You hate me, but your abhorrence cannot equal that with which I regard myself. So there you go.
That's what I want to say to everyone out there.
You hate me, but your abhorrence cannot equal that with which I regard myself.
Yeah, so don't even try to match the levels, because you won't succeed.
You will not succeed.
So that was Johnny White, really, really. I thought that was amazing. I hope you didn't think he was evil.
No.
he's definitely not. He's a very nice man.
I hope you haven't ended up in prison because of his... decree that if you think Ringo is a bad drummer, you should go to prison. Is that what you
think? Yeah, I think that's... I completely agree.
Yeah.
No, it was good stuff. I mean, there was so much great stuff in that episode that we had to edit out, which was a bit of a shame, but it was it was quite a long one, and, you know, maybe one day we'll have some kind of vault where you can find these unedited ones. But yeah, I mean, it was really great fun. Thank you for joining to doing it, and we should just want to do one more plug for his podcast, Lunch Watch, which is made by Hat Trick Productions and is available now and is very, very funny / weirdly relaxing.
And also you should check out his Bandcamp page, which has both of his Edinburgh shows on there. It's Johnny White, reallyreally.bandcamp.com.
Great stuff. So thank you so much for listening. If you want to support the show, please do remember that, you know, we do have costs to cover and stuff. So if you're feeling incredibly generous, then you can go to personalbeatles.com/donate and chuck us a couple of quid so we can sort of keep making these episodes. And you can also rate us. That's really helpful on, you know, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever it's called now, Apple Podcasts. And we'll be back next week with another really great episode featuring keyboard player and musician Christian Madden, who plays keys for Liam Gallagher's touring band and recorded lots of records with him, as well as lots of other amazing artists. And he's a massive Beatles fan, so that one was really fun.
Yeah, it was great. Really nice to chat to Christian. I used to play in a band with him a few years ago called The Revival Hour. And so, you know, I'm only one degree away from Liam Gallagher. So,
if,
you know, I'm basically in Oasis.
Giggsy or whatever he's
called. I have a theory with Oasis that they went downhill after the first drummer left.
Tony McCarroll.
Tony McCarroll was such a kind of, let's say, straightforward drummer.
Yeah, but well, I think that's why he was sacked.
Yeah, but that's why it worked, because it almost had the kind of motoric kind of just groove.
Yeah.
You know, and
I think didn't Noel Gallagher got rid of him because he said he got a case of lazy-itis.
Yeah. But I digress, though. Christian was lovely to chat to. Really nice to get some kind of technical knowledge. Lots of good chat about Billy Preston.
Yeah, and Nicky Hopkins as well. And he's fantastic. And we'll play a bit of his cover of Eleanor Rigby as well, which is absolutely
great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So lots to look forward to. So thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be back next week with Christian Madden.
Cheerio.
Your Own Personal Beatles is presented by Jack Pelling and Robin Allender. The podcast artwork is done by Morgan Ritchie. It's produced by me, Jack Pelling, and is a Homespun Sounds production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.